Hello, it's Thursday, 3rd of December. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauerman from Check In Asia.
On this week's show, we're talking vaccines.
With the breaking news that the UK will start vaccinating against COVID-19 next week, where are we in Southeast Asia? And will the vaccine be a panacea for Southeast Asian travel industry that we all hope it will be? So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. It seems like vaccines were a pipe dream when we started talking about them earlier in the year, weren't they, Gary? But amazingly, it's actually becoming reality. What do you think about that, Gary?
Yeah, well, everything that you just said there, Hannah, and to embellish, you know, it does feel like we've been building up to this point for months and months and months. Our first year of doing the Southeast Asia Travel Show, Hannah, and all we've really talked about is COVID-19. We've talked about everything in between, all these kind of stop gaps and hopes that we've had along the way to try and find a way back for travel. But I think we said it back in September, Hannah, it did look like it was vaccine or bust for the travel industry. And I guess now it's coming to that point. We have one vaccine approved in the UK. There'll be a lot more rolled out over the next month or so, but really kind of the hard work begins here. But in terms of where we are in Southeast Asia, well, we'll discuss that in a minute. It's hopeful, it's positive, you know, it's something that we haven't had for a long time. Yeah, I mean, it's been a dark year, hasn't it? So we've got to end it slightly more positive than we've been through the past few months.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like you say, it's that hope. But you know, I guess what I'm afraid of is that everybody's going to get over enthusiastic too early, you know, realistically, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a bit later too. You know, the vaccine is not going to be rolled out to a lot of the general public, you know, maybe not even to guarantee herd immunity by the end of next year. So I think, unfortunately, Gary, we're going to be talking about COVID-19 well into 2021 too.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. I think what this does do a little bit, it does sort of change the focus of the debate, because we are going to be moving much more now into the era of vaccine travel, vaccine politics, vaccine geopolitics, vaccine economics, all those kinds of things. So it will really dominate the debate. But, you know, we can't leave some of these other elements behind, because, as you say, there's going to be a huge interim period, particularly in our region, where we have got to get the economies up and running again. We've got to get the travel sector up and running again, because otherwise, you know, the economic impact is going to be beyond drastic. So yeah, you're right. We will be talking about this over the next few months, but yeah, it's been a long year. Let's try to at least be positive.
No, I am. No, it's great news. It's great news. So shall we start this then by having a quick look at what countries within Southeast Asia are doing with regards to the vaccine and where they are? Because some have secured vaccines already. Some are still in talks. So we have a quick whiz around the region. And maybe we'll do it alphabetically, right? We'll start with Cambodia. So Cambodia, they have not secured anything, according to the mainstream press yet. They've been in talks with Russia. They're part of COVAX. Australia have said they're going to support them with vaccines, but nothing secured yet. What about Indonesia, Gary?
Yeah, well, Indonesia is quite an interesting case, because it's been quite closely aligned to China and the vaccine trials that have been coming out of China. Indonesia's state-owned pharmaceutical firm, Biopharma, has been working with China's Sinovac. They've been conducting third-phase clinical trials of that particular vaccine, which is one of the WHO's declared vaccine candidates. We'll come to those again in a minute. And so, obviously, having participated in the trials, you would imagine that it's going to get some priority in terms of vaccine rollout from China. I think it's also been working with two other of China's vaccine candidates as well. But as you said at the beginning, Hannah, you know, we're moving this year where there could be like almost a cocktail of vaccines in different countries. Indonesia had already mentioned previously that it was working with a firm from the UAE. It possibly, I think, has also secured some from AstraZeneca. Is that right, Hannah?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've secured 100 million doses from AstraZeneca. That's meant to be arriving Q2, 30 million by Novavax. But they're actually continuously almost in the press at the moment, talking about still starting their vaccine rollout at the end of this month, at the end of December. So I don't think a vaccine has yet been approved. And in fact, I think their health authorities said that they would not approve a vaccine for kind of general mass immunization, but that they could make exceptions for special cases. So things like healthcare frontliners and things. So I would say actually out of all of the countries within Southeast Asia, Indonesia looks like the closest to actually starting to roll out a vaccination program.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's also quite an interesting case because Chinese state media, which I was reading last week, said that it had promised to prioritize vaccine supply to certain ASEAN members. Now, the ones that Chinese media stated were the five Mekong River countries, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Myanmar, and Vietnam. And the Philippines. It didn't mention Indonesia. But having actually done a lot of the trial work in Indonesia, you imagine, I don't know if that's just a typographical error or whatever, but you would certainly think that Indonesia is in the mix for the Chinese vaccine as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think so, yeah. I mean, I think that Indonesia is one of the countries I was reading that already do have facilities to develop and produce vaccines. So certainly if China's looking for a good hub to use within Southeast Asia, then Indonesia would be it.
Absolutely. Biggest population in the region as well. So, you know, there's a lot of rollout that's needed throughout the country.
Mm. So looking at Laos, Laos is in talks with Russia. It's part of COVAX. As far as I have seen, I don't think it's really secured any vaccines yet. Malaysia, we had the big news last week that they have completed a preliminary purchase agreement with Pfizer to buy 12.8 million doses. So that would cover about 20% of Malaysia's population. And that would be slated to roll out in Q1 next year. So not too long to wait.
Yeah, I mean, that's a curious case. I mean, you know, I don't know how they come up with these numbers, 12.8 million doses. So you know, for the Pfizer vaccine, you have to cut that in half because it's a double dose vaccine. But then you're looking at, well, where will the gaps be filled? And you would imagine China and Malaysia were talking last week that China would prioritize Malaysia again as one of the countries that it would supply the vaccine to. You know, there's a lot more gaps to be filled in terms of the rollout. And I would think that China will certainly play a part in Malaysia as well.
Yeah, and the same for Myanmar. You know, we've had the Myanmar ambassador praising the China vaccine. Like you say, it's one of the Mekong countries that China has promised support to as well. Moving to the Philippines, and this is a pretty interesting one in a way. So last week there was news that Philippines signed a deal with AstraZeneca for 2.6 million doses, which would cover about 1 million people, which is a kind of drop in the ocean when it comes to the Philippines population. But this actually wasn't a deal signed by the Filipino government. This was signed by a kind of group of 30 international companies. And these companies have clubbed together to buy this vaccine, and they will donate a portion to the Philippines government. But they'll actually be reserving a large amount of that, I think, for their own staff. Whereas Philippines, other than that, they're in talks with Russia, they're in talks with China, like you said, they're also potentially starting clinical trials for both of those countries within the Philippines. And I guess it's a good target for that within Southeast Asia due to the number of cases that are still prevalent.
As we mentioned right at the start, you know, the vaccine politics are going to get incredibly difficult, but so too the vaccine economics, because countries aren't going to be able to afford the huge costs of all these vaccines, that they are huge. So that, you know, they will have to come with some other trade deals attached to them, you would imagine. But in some cases, as you say here, there may be not just public distribution of vaccines, there may be some private distribution of vaccines as well. We don't yet know how this will actually pan out across the next year. But you can imagine that in some countries where small numbers of vaccines are going to be distributed to, usually to the most vulnerable sectors of the society, frontline workers, that kind of thing. But, you know, business travelers will want to travel. So how will they get access to a vaccine? Will they have, you know, will there be an option that you can pay to be vaccinated as opposed to the actual clinical public health rollout?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole argument, isn't it, about who gets prioritized. I mean, yes, frontline workers first, and I think that probably be the same across all countries. But then who goes next? Is it those most vulnerable people, or do you choose to vaccine the people who would generate the most for the economy? You know, help the economy get back on its feet. It's that decision, again, this, you know, that we've seen this year that governments keep having to take is, you know, health versus economy. And they're going to face this same dilemma when it comes to a vaccine rollout too.
Yeah, we'll come back to more of that in a moment. But let's look at Singapore, Hannah. What's happening there?
Well, Singapore, I mean, they've been a little bit cagey, actually. They haven't really said that they have secured vaccines, but they have said they have made arrangements with multiple vaccine providers to make sure they are not last to receive the vaccine, a minister said. They are also developing their own vaccine, and they expect that shipments would be starting in Q1 again next year, and that's a single dose. And Moderna this week has been seeking authority approval in Singapore. So that's perhaps a little hint that one of the vaccine providers that Singapore has been talking to is Moderna. But yeah, they're keeping their cards pretty close to their chest. But I would be very surprised if they haven't secured a very good supply of vaccine doses by now.
Yeah, you know, and the thing about Singapore as well, has a very small population. I mean, there is every chance that everybody in Singapore will be vaccinated at the same time in the same rollout. I'd be very surprised if that doesn't happen.
Yep, exactly. Thailand, what's going on there, Gary?
Yeah, so again, there was a big news story. It was almost like a celebration. I don't know if you saw that in the media last week, that the Prime Minister signed a deal, and it got huge news coverage, TV coverage. So they've secured from AstraZeneca about 26 million doses, which again would cover about 13 million people. That's expected to be rolled out in the first half of next year. It's also signed a letter of intent between the Siam Bioscience Company and a business conglomerate with AstraZeneca. So hopefully there'll be a supply of the AstraZeneca vaccine at some point next year. But again, it looks like Thailand is doing deals with different people. It's got to secure enough doses at the right price. I mean, this is the issue, isn't it? If you just buy the first dosage that's available, you're not going to get the best price. Countries are playing vaccine suppliers off against each other. Vaccine suppliers are playing countries off each other. So there's a lot more to be done here. But, you've got the feeling from the way Thailand has reported this and the way it's basically said that it mostly will close its borders until, well, certainly for the first quarter of next year, that it is really looking to roll out quite quickly. And I would expect Thailand to be one of the forefront countries in the region in doing that.
Yeah, I mean, and by building its own production hub as well for AstraZeneca, Thailand is kind of competing, isn't it, with Indonesia. So Indonesia could potentially be this big hub within Southeast Asia for the Chinese vaccines, Thailand for AstraZeneca.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point to make, because we're not really just looking at this actual vaccine here. No, we're looking at the future of bioscience in Southeast Asia. And, you know, we don't know, but that, you know, there could be future pandemics, but there's going to be certainly future opportunities in bioscience research across this region. And so, you know, there is a competition to be at the forefront of that, working with, you know, major bioscience countries around the world. China would certainly be one of those.
Yeah. And to follow on what you were saying earlier, you know, governments weighing up the cost of the vaccines. I mean, that's pretty much what Vietnam has said at the moment. So their deputy prime minister said in early November that it plans to continue its containment strategy rather than rush into procuring vaccines, which could be financially risky. So they are also trying to develop a homegrown vaccine that might not be available until the end of 2021.
So having run through the region there, Hannah, I think it's worth just taking just a sort of step back in terms of a lot of the names of the vaccines that we discussed there and the different countries that are developing these. Now, obviously, yesterday, UK made headlines around the world by being the first country in the world to actually register and approve the Pfizer vaccine. Now, in the US, that is likely to be done on the 10th of December. In the European Union, that looks like it's going to be decided on the 29th of December. So currently in Europe and in the US, I would say, you have the AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna. Those are the three that are making headlines, and all three of those are double dose vaccines. Now, if you look in our region, China has four different companies that are producing vaccines and are moving towards registration. In Russia, the Sputnik vaccine has apparently been approved. President Putin has said he wants mass vaccinations to begin next week. So there are these numbers of players around the world. Now, I thought before we carry on, Hannah, I would have a look at the WHO and just look at what the actual current figures are for the vaccines that are out there. Okay, so according to the WHO, there are currently 51 candidate vaccines worldwide that are in third stage or in clinical trials. Okay, so 51. And there are 163 that are in preclinical evaluation. So they haven't yet got to the actual clinical trials yet. So take those two numbers, 51 that are actually being evaluated worldwide and 163 that some of those may fall by the wayside. But that, you know, so that's well over 200 vaccines that, you know, could potentially be developed. Now, most of those vaccines, the vast majority of those vaccines are double dose. So you would take the first dose on day zero and the second dose, usually 28 days later. Now, if the listeners out there take nothing else from this podcast except this, I would say this. There are 11 vaccines that are currently in evaluation stage, which are single dose. Now, if these are approved, these would change absolutely everything because it would be one shot. There would not be a 28-day interim period, and it would make the logistics so much easier. There are two from China. There's one from Israel. There are major international pharmaceutical companies such as Janssen and Merck. And I think we should look out for those in the next couple of months because those really would be game changers.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the Pfizer vaccine, although they have signed an agreement, signed here one in Malaysia, actually, it would be incredibly difficult to roll that out in Southeast Asia because of the cold chain storage requirements. And when you're thinking about countries like Indonesia, like Philippines, they're very much island-based, very, very dispersed population, it's going to become really, really difficult logistics-wise to send that out.
Yeah, absolutely, which is we'll come on to the airlines and how they will be involved. But as the UK said yesterday, the number of vaccines that it will initially begin to roll out will be at 50 hospitals based around the country. They can't actually, as you said, because of the way that it needs to be stored, they can't be sent to GP surgeries or to small clinics. They have to be administered through hospitals. Now, that obviously proves a little bit problematic. How do you actually distribute this vaccine to care homes? It's very difficult for people in care homes to go to the hospital and get vaccinated. So, you know, these are some of the issues that we'll be finding in the next couple of months or so.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting, you know, if we're talking about which countries' names in Southeast Asia are coming up a lot, we're hearing a lot of China, we're hearing a lot of, not a lot, but we're hearing some about Russia. You know, as you keep saying, Gary, vaccine diplomacy is going to play a big role in Southeast Asia. And I think it's going to shape the whole economy here, isn't it, essentially? You know, we don't know right now whether by signing with China or Russia, whether there are other obligations, you know, attached to that. It's unclear.
It's kind of the place that we're in right now, but we are moving towards some sort of resolution. But I agree with you. The negotiations that are going on behind the scenes right now, you know, would be quite intense, and they will involve trade and diplomacy as well as the vaccine itself. I think the interesting point, Hannah, is you mentioned there is the logistics and how the airlines would be involved. And I think another element now, no, we read last week that Alan Joyce, the CEO of Qantas, said that for international travelers, Qantas would require passengers to be vaccinated. Now, that caused a little bit of a stir throughout the industry. Some people thought that IATA in particular thought that he jumped the gun a little bit there by saying that, but he certainly put the cat among the pigeons, and I think it's a discussion that was probably needed. But there's this other argument that, you know, will the airlines be the ones that actually decide whether passengers need to be vaccinated, or will it be the countries themselves? You know, will countries actually going forward require you to have a digital COVID passport or whatever to leave a country and to enter another country? So actually, the airlines will just be the facilitators of that, and they actually don't get to decide.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will have to be that way eventually. Imagine, because, you know, if you do need a certain vaccination to be able to enter the country, then you shouldn't be allowed to get on the plane to get there if you don't have it. You know, there should be that coordination. But it does seem a little bit early for Qantas to be talking about this. You know, IATA actually said we cannot wait, otherwise we'll all be dead by the time that vaccines are rolled out, which maybe not an eloquent way of putting it, but certainly a very blunt way of kind of shooting down that idea. You know, of course, yes, it will go some way to allay those fears of passengers of, you know, potentially catching COVID on the flight. But, you know, what happens for those people who just not allowed, you know, perhaps medically to take the vaccine due to other health conditions that they've got, then they're automatically, you know, ruled out that possibility of being able to travel altogether. I think it's going to be, like you say, I think it's got to be driven by the countries. And yes, we may well see this kind of COVID or vaccination passports being rolled out.
Yeah. And, you know, IATA also has been pushing very strongly in the last week or so for more testing, for pre-flight testing, but not just testing before you fly and when you arrive, but actually a whole information system that would enable the world to better integrate management of COVID-19 testing among passengers, so that they can share information, that they have a better idea to stop, you know, this increase in numbers of passengers that are testing positive upon arrival. There were 16 yesterday in China that tested positive upon arrival. And you're just wondering now, we've been talking about this for weeks, really. The state of testing really hasn't, it's not a good look. It really hasn't really shown either the airline industry or governments in their best light, because there has been such a lack of integration. And going forward, if we're mixing up testing as well as vaccination, you know, there is the real risk of even more confusion going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that right now there are a lot of chances for things to slip through the cracks and be overlooked. But if you're trying to create this kind of secure infrastructure, then you need to have all of these things in place. But really, I mean, they should have been talking about this months ago, shouldn't they, Gary?
I guess they probably were. I think the problem here has been, you know, this sort of real separation that we've seen between governments doing what they believe is necessary for public health, and then you have the travel industry. And there has been very little coordination. And, you know, even international and global bodies within the tourism sector have been pretty ineffective in lobbying governments and getting their view across. You know, governments have been very much the forerunners in the way that this has been managed. We really have moved into an era of big government, particularly in Asia, I would say. And, you know, some of these international organizations have really struggled to get their messages across. And while I really support what IATA is doing right now, because it is absolutely vital that we get testing managed in a much more effective way, because we really do need passengers back in the air. We can't rely on the vaccine because, you know, you're absolutely right. As IATA said, waiting for the vaccine for everybody to be able to travel is just too long. You know, a lot of airlines, a lot of tourism businesses will be long gone by then. So there has to be this interim period. But how do we manage this interim period when governments themselves are going to be focusing almost exclusively on vaccine development?
Yeah. And, you know, this IATA Digital Health Pass, they're talking about, you know, having digital lab certificates and things. This is going to need a lot of support and coordination from the government too. You know, they can't do this in isolation. They, you know, of course they can set up a test, but if they need to be they need a way to verify that the test certificates are accurate and are genuine, that's going to need some more integration into different systems. And likely many countries, smaller countries, might not even have that kind of centralized system. So how do you roll that
out? Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. And you look at, you know, Singapore Changi has been talking, you know, for a month or two, maybe 2 months. They're building their own on-site laboratory for testing. You know, that'll be rolled out properly in the first quarter of next year. But again, that's only, it's a great idea. And, you know, it's investment into public health in travel. But it's only really as strong as the weakest link in the chain. So if no other airports have the same kind of system, there's going to be a lack of information sharing. It's great to be able to test people when they arrive and when they leave. We just don't have the coordination one year into this pandemic that perhaps we would have hoped for.
Talking about IATA, but something else that they have been kind of banging on a little bit recently is just what a role actually the airlines are going to have in the vaccine rollout. So they came out with quite a nice video. I don't know if you've seen the video, Gary. It's got very dramatic music, and calling it the largest logistical exercise ever. So IATA estimated that it would take 8,000 Boeing 747 cargo planes to vaccinate every single human on the planet. And that's just with one dose. But the problem with that is that there are only 2,000 cargo planes in the world. And most cargo flies, you know, using passenger planes, in the belly of passenger planes. And of course, these passenger planes have seen their capacities cut. They've seen their routes cut. They're in storage because of travel restrictions and everything else. So until those are lifted, these passenger planes might not necessarily be flying, and therefore the capacity to roll out the vaccine as well is very much limited.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, isn't it? You know, some of these airlines have parked so many of their planes in these boneyards. The famous one is in Alice Springs in Australia. You know, will these be chartered? Will governments charter these planes as part of this logistical operation? Or will the airlines themselves take the hit and try and make the money themselves rather than them being chartered by governments? You know, so many issues are being thrown up here, but obviously we're going to need a huge amount of aircraft to move this around the world. I mean, the interesting thing is that there are facilities to produce these vaccines in several different countries, but there's still going to need to be moved around, particularly, as you say, in our region. There are some very big countries in themselves. You know, Philippines and Indonesia are huge countries.
Yeah. And in our region, it's likely to be Singapore Airlines and Garuda, I think, at least initially, who will be doing that, because these are the two airlines which have been certified to carry vaccines. So I can see that they're both playing quite a role, I imagine, in the vaccine rollout around the region.
You know, what happens if you're one of the countries that isn't one of your airlines? Is there going to be any issue there? I mean, you know, all airlines need revenues to reboot themselves. You would think that the vaccine revenues would be important to rebuilding an airline's revenue stream.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think if I were running an airline right now, that would definitely be one of the things that I would be looking into. And we've even seen Teleport, which is the AirAsia logistics arm here, now saying that they are ready to roll out vaccines as well. So AirAsia have spotted that opportunity to firm up the supply chain there.
So Hannah, throughout 2020, we've spoken endlessly about COVID-19. How many months do you think we'll be talking about vaccine travel?
It's probably just going to be the future, isn't it? Well, we're going to be talking about it for months, if not years afterwards, Gary, I think. You know, epidemiologists are saying that COVID-19 is not going to disappear. It might just be there like a seasonal flu is. It's just going to be a part of this new normal, as much as I hate that phrase, the new normal travel. If you want to travel, you need it.
And also, you know, looking at it realistically, we have to get through the winter months. If you look at, you know, Northeast Asia, Europe, North America, you know, we've got the cold winter months coming. It's going to be difficult. You know, these vaccine rollouts would need to start pretty quickly, even to keep the numbers down. I mean, you look at some of the numbers in Europe and particularly the US. I mean, they're horrific right now.
Exactly. I mean, and it will be also interesting to see how destinations start using vaccine rollouts as a way to reopen tourism as well. So we've kind of seen a hint of this actually with Indonesia and Bali. At the beginning of November, the government were saying, we are keen to see Bali become a green zone in early 2021, when they were talking about the rolling out of the vaccine. And more recently, we've also seen Nusa Dua trying to designate itself as a COVID-free green zone. So are we going to see countries tactically choosing to vaccinate people, you know, tourism workers or high popularity tourism spots, get the people vaccinated there and then open it up for international tourism? Would that be a thing?
I would be skeptical about that. I personally think that's a very big risk to take on your reputation. If that's the way you believe tourism can go, is only going down that route, I would be very skeptical. I think travelers have had a year to really take stock of this situation and what they want from travel in the future. They're not going to be blindsided. They're not going to be traveling again with blindfolds on. They're going to be very, very aware of what the risks are and how destinations are opening up to them with honesty and transparency. Personally, I'm not convinced by that route.
So, well, that brings us to the end of this vaccine edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show. We hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to read your feedback on what we said or what we missed out. So email us at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com and look out for our daily travel insights and podcast news on LinkedIn at the Southeast Asia Travel Show and Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah, meanwhile, you can catch up with our full back catalogue, a whole year's worth of the Southeast Asia Travel Show and the Friday Rewind Show on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com. or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app.
That's a wrap for this week. We'll both be watching avidly to see whether UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson will take the vaccine jab live on primetime TV. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye-bye.